I think okay. everybody will be muted at the start of the meeting anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, have fun.
Cheers.
Evening all.
Evening, Tim.
Hello, Tim.
Evening, Tim.
Okay, I make it 7 o'clock.
I agree, Chairman.
Oh, yeah, the bells have rung. Thank you. Lovely. Okay, please be advised that this meeting may be recorded and data collected during the recording of the meeting will be retained in accordance with the Council's data retention policy. The recording of the meeting may be added to the Council's website. Can I ask everybody in attendance mutes their microphone and announces their name before speaking? And can I remind you that the use of the instant messaging facility is for advising if a member wishes to speak or draw urgent attention, not to hold a conversation or put forward a point of view. The IM is strictly not for use by members of the public. Any member of the public that uses the IM inappropriately may be removed from the meeting. That's a new bit. Right. This is a virtual extraordinary local plan panel being conducted in accordance with the local authorities and police and crime panel coronavirus flexibility of local authority police and crime panel meetings England and Wales regulations 2020 number 392. I'd like to welcome everybody to this remote extraordinary local plan panel, including visiting members and members of the public. For the benefit of the public, can I also advise you that the Head of Planning Services, the Planning Policy Manager, and a whole raft of other policies from the Planning Policy Team and Democratic Services are in attendance. Can I ask if there are any apologies for absence?
Thank you, Chairman. There are no apologies for absence. Thank you.
Lovely. Are there any declarations of interest? I can see nothing in the IM to indicate anybody is wanting to make a declaration of interest. Right. I'd like to advise you that the item on the agenda tonight is a Part A report, which is to recommend for recommendation to the Cabinet, who will make the final decision. Before I start the agenda, I'd just like to pay tribute to all the officers that have been involved in putting this local plan together. I think it's been a tremendous effort under some extraordinary circumstances the past year. They've worked to a very tight timeline and come up with a whole raft of new approaches that the new administration wanted to incorporate within the local plan. I think it's fair to say that when the new administration took over in 2019, the local plan team had to work to a radically different strategy. Meaning that much of the work they'd done for the previous year didn't really contribute much to this, to the direction that the new administration went. So the fact that they have got such a robust and I believe really positive set of policies together in that time is a real tribute to them. So I would just like to put now on record my thanks to all of our local plan team for getting us where we are today. Now, agenda item 3 is the only agenda item. The Swaleboro Local Plan Review Regulation 19 consultation document. And can I ask the planning policy manager, Jill Peat, to introduce the report?
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everyone. The local plan review document has indeed been many months in the making. Officers have presented the various evidence reports along the way. We've had workshops and we've had panel meetings where we've sought steers. We now have a pre-consultation draft local plan review document, and it's contained in Appendix 1 of the papers, that, if approved by full council on the 3rd of February, will be consulted upon later that month. The covering report proposes four recommendations. Firstly, that the remaining evidence is noted. This consists of the draft final report on whole plan viability and a report on locally important countryside gaps. The final transport modelling run of allocated sites will be reported in early summer when it's complete. Normally, hard copies of consultation documents are available for inspection at the council offices and at local libraries. As a result of the pandemic, we are unable to do that for this pre-submission consultation. And therefore, the second recommendation is that members agree the addendum to the Statement of Community Involvement that sets out how the council will address the COVID-related restrictions. This is in line with the government guidelines for consulting during COVID-19. Thirdly, members are asked to agree the local plan review pre-submission document itself and the accompanying documents, including those elements that form part of the document and those elements that support it. That includes the infrastructure delivery plan and the draft transport strategy. Just in terms of the transport strategy, KCC is a delivery partner, and Swale and KCC Kent County Council officers have worked jointly on the draft, but it is not a joint document at this stage. The interim sustainability appraisal report and the HRA, the Habitat Regulation Assessment, are also before members of the panel. These are documents that will need to be published alongside the plan for consultation purposes, and again when the council submits to the Secretary of State under Regulation 22. The version of the local plan review document before you is indeed a draft. There's a little bit of tidying up still to be done, checking policy references, links and so on. There may well be some points raised this evening that give rise to minor word changes that don't change the essence of a policy but might make it clearer. With that in mind, it would be prudent to grant delegated authority for minor amendments to be made. These are amendments that are non-material, and it would be a good idea to grant delegated authority for this at all stages of the local plan process, including during the course of the examination if required, because this will help keep the progress of the local plan review on target. And that's the final recommendation of the report. Thank you very much, Chair. Back to you.
Thank you, Jill. Okay, so the recommendations are on page 5 of the report. There are four recommendations. Does anybody have any questions or points they would like to raise? Please indicate in the IM. Well, I see no indications, so I will move all four recommendations. Can I have a seconder?
Yeah,
go on.
Councillor
Bonney.
Okay, so I think that was me proposing and Monique, Councillor Bonney seconding the recommendations. Councillor Hunt, just in time for a comment.
Thank you. I just wanted to check what he was doing, because I wasn't sure how you were going to play it this evening. And just to say, are you sort of proposing these and then going through the whole document after that and then voting on each one? as we go through it, or are you going to then take all four at the end together?
Well, now that you've kindly spoken, we could actually discuss that. Otherwise, I'd have to remove all four on once and take a vote on them. I've asked for people to ask questions, so basically it's on any part of the report if you have any questions or queries.
In that case, I have a number of questions on the report.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I'll go through if I've got a number of points.
Have you got page references?
Yeah, I have.
That's good.
I'm just going to try and find each point I've got highlighted. So on page 6, starting off with the background in 2.1, what we just heard there at the beginning, this local plan is completely different. I think you mentioned radical there, and I'm a bit not so sure about that. I don't think there's really that much that is that different in this local plan. As it says there in 2.1, the main issues raised from the consultation, the local plan review will be superseded, will supersede bearing fruits, but incorporate some of its elements and unimplemented development land allocations. And that to me makes it clear that they've agreed to incorporate the previous plan in this, and there hasn't been changes with that. So considering bearing fruits will be superseded by this local plan, were there opportunities during the review process to change the sites currently allocated? As I know, most, if not all, the sites that are currently in the local plan are still in there. And just raising that, because as an example, there's one in Irate Village Centre that remains, yet it hasn't come forward in the timescale that was originally put in bearing fruits. And I'm not so sure at the moment, even now, that site would come forward. And if we're looking at still including sites in there that haven't come forward in the past, that could be something that I think that may mess up a bit on the 5-year supply. So if you want to answer the question as we go, or...
Yeah, that's probably going to be easiest. We have to have justification to remove an allocation. This is only a review, so we have had no indication that there was a reason that we could have taken that out. The Grovehurst roundabout development meant that the arguments that development in that area couldn't be supported were removed, because the improvements to the Grovehurst roundabout meant that the existing allocations could be delivered. So without any strong evidence to take allocations out, we've had to roll them forward. I don't know if Jill can add to that at all.
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. I think what's really important to see at this point is that sites in the local plan, whether they are rolled forward unimplemented allocations or new sites, they must be deliverable. And we know that there are some sites that are in bearing that are no longer deliverable. This is particularly the case in Sittleborne Town Centre. I'm thinking about Swale House. I'm thinking about another small site that's been lost as a result of the Aldi supermarket regeneration. So that is absolutely our starting point. If we have any evidence that confirms a site is not deliverable, then it drops off. Thanks.
Councillor Hunt.
Okay, that's great, thanks. My next question is on 2.8 on page 7. It mentions there about why we're looking at putting more housing down at Faversham. And just the question is, at what point would housing in Sittingbourne have a negative impact on the ability to deliver the 5-year supply? As it seems at this time, it is housing in Sittingbourne that's being relied upon to deliver the 5-year supply. Because if we're looking at Faversham, just coming forward later on in the plan, then we're it seems to be a bit mixed up there.
Well, we have currently got a 5-year supply, and the going forward relies upon obviously this local plan going being submitted and agreed. But I don't think we're reliant purely on Sitting Bull sites to deliver the first 5-year housing supply. I think there is expectation that we'll start be building out elsewhere. Jill, do we have those figures to hand?
I'm afraid I don't have them to hand, Chair, but there are a significant number of sites in and around Sitting Bourne that have been constrained because of the issues with Junction 5 of the M2. So when that pressure's removed, there's nothing holding back those sites. But as a planning authority, we want to make sure that the houses are being delivered across the borough. And we've got sites across the borough that we anticipate will do that, particularly in the next 5 years.
Okay, Councillor Hunt.
Okay, thank you. My next question, this is mainly is all questions just at this point, as I go through it, just to get a bit of clarity on things. And this was on 212 on page 8, and it's based on the evidence of what further evidence we've got. And I'm a bit concerned that we're at a point here of looking to take the plan out of consultation and straight over to a government inspector to be looking at this. And it doesn't seem to be any opportunities to be coming back to us once the consultation's happened. So it seems to me it's not really a consultation. It's this is what we're doing. Give us a good reason why we can't do it and carry on. But with these not having to be able to make that sort of decision, not have viability assessments, the countryside gap study, or especially transport modelling runs, it's a real concern. And I just think if anything does come back between now, when we're talking about taking this out to consultation and in between taking it to the inspector, would any of these coming back not be material considerations? Because we're saying here that it will come back if there is material considerations raised and it's delegated to officers to deal with minor issues. But wouldn't these things be material consideration?
I think we've actually got the whole plan viability assessment and the local important countryside gap study on the table. Jill?
Yes, Chair, they are now published and they're part of the pack of reports. I could say more about that if you wish, Chair.
No, but there was part of the thing. The only thing, I mean, there will be an opportunity to discuss the countryside gap study shortly. I have a couple of points on it. Regarding the transport modelling, that will be coming back in, we're hoping for that late spring. But we've got the confidence from previous runs and the work that we've done with Kent Highways, but this will not throw up any major problems with transport modelling. Otherwise, we wouldn't be going down this route. Obviously, we couldn't start the traffic modelling until the sites had been agreed. And that was only last November, I think. So... it's fairly normal. That's a late part of the process. It takes KCC about 6 months to run one of these, and no council is going to sit around for 6 months having finished its local plan, waiting for the transport modelling to come back. You've built in the confidence in that traffic modelling and the work that's already been done. So we're not envisaging any major problems with transport modelling. So, Councillor Hunt.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm just coming back. And, yeah, sorry, my fault there because the... I just lost my point. I made these notes before we actually got those final documents out. And when I first got the local the report, I did it straight away. So, apologies for that. But it is, yeah, the traffic modelling is still the thing for me. But as you say, you think it's okay, so...
Okay.
And that was all the questions I had, sorry.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Hunt. Councillor Bowen.
Thank you, Chairman. It's a general question, actually, and this is one that one of my residents has asked me, which I would appreciate the either yours or the officer's view on. And I'm going to read it as actually has been presented to me. So at the Extraordinary Local Plan Panel of Wednesday, the 2nd of December, members of the council were presented with an executive summary concerning the whole plan viability, essentially a requirement to consider risks and costs associated with the local plan. At what point has pollution costs on health and wellbeing been included in preparing our council members and on that? Where planning is linked to pollution through the concept of cumulative impact mandating the MPPF, guidelines and government policy definitions of harm from particulate matter. So why is the council not giving this the weight it deserves in their thinking? If somebody could answer that, please, I'd be grateful. And that's from one of my residents.
Jill, I don't know which of our officers would be particularly on with that one, but I'm handing it over to you first.
Thank you, Chair. It's quite a complex question. I'm a little bit concerned I haven't got everything down. Would you just mind?
Could you paste it into IM, Lloyd?
Give us a minute, and I can do. If you want to move on to the next one, I'll do that, and then I can come back if you want, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks, okay. Lloyd. Cameron Bart, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I have two very quick questions, and I think one of them may have potentially been answered. But Jill said about the sites that are no longer available or no longer likely to come forward because circumstances have changed, and referenced the Aldi site in Sittingbourne. Mine in particular was on the former bus depot in Shellness Road, because I know that has changed hands and the current owners have got no intention to bring it forward for housing. And also on the map that's been published, Appendix 8, the site that's supposedly Rushenden South, which now appears to be Rushenden North, South, East and West, the person promoting that doesn't own most of that site, so I just wonder if there could be a comment on the actual chances of that ever coming forward.
Jill?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Regarding the first point about Shellness Bus Depot, if you're able to share any information with us, that would be extremely valuable. I mean, obviously, we try and collect our own information, but sometimes information comes from other sources that we're not able to get hold of. So that would be extremely useful. With regards to the site at Rushenden, you'll recall that the site Rushenden Marshes was submitted through the call for sites process and the SHLA, and initially the focus for development was on the part of the land that was outside of the land at risk of flooding. As is the case with all of the sites, and this is normal and you would expect this, more information has become available to the site promoters, and it's absolutely, you know, this is information that we share with our stakeholders, Environment Agency, for example. And things do evolve and change. And given the regeneration benefits that are associated with development in that location, they are looking more towards developing land that is adjacent to the existing settlement confines to make for a more integrated and cohesive development approach. In terms of land ownership, I'm afraid that's for them to worry about. The information that we have demonstrates that they have the confidence that the site can be delivered. We're not relying on delivery on the site during the first 5 years of the plan, appreciating that it has challenges, that it is a very complex site. Don't know if that answers your question.
Councillor Beard?
It does, and it also poses another, because similarly to the bus depot at Shellness, I've spoken to one of the landowners on that land, and they've said they've got no intention of letting it go, selling it, developing it, whatever. So it does concern me that our response is it's for them to worry about, because, of course, it's a major allocation that's going to be a major allocation in our plan. And I don't think saying to the inspectorate it's for them to worry about is going to necessarily tick the box.
Jill, anything further to add? Or?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I might have been able to put that in a slightly different way, but what they've done is they've provided us with information regarding ownership and options that they have, and there's no reason not to trust the information that they provide us with. And given that we're not sitting looking over a map, it's very difficult to be clear that we're even talking about the same parcels of land. So I don't really have anything else to add.
Okay. I'm going to take the next three, Lloyd, and then come back to yours, just so that we keep the thread clear in the IM. Is that okay?
Absolutely fine, yeah, no problem.
Okay, Councillor Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Page 31, paragraph 4.3.83. The level of affordable housing is overall less than 30%, which is the local current local plan. In more detail, it seems that there's 30% on the greenfield sites, 20% on brownfield sites. Also, that despite reference to the nationally described space standards for housing being assumed in the viability report, there does not appear to be any reference to them in the standards for housing in the plan for the DM policies. Can you answer that? Thank you.
Did you get that question, Jill?
I did, thank you. It's in one of the strategic policies. It's up front and centre. It's covered in policy ST5.
Have you got a page for that? Cause I'm trying.
It's page 53 in the papers, or page 31 of the draft document.
Have you got that, Carol?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Whelan.
Thank you, Mike. For clarity, in several places, the report refers to travel alternatives to the car, but without any explanation. They use things in words like shall be adequate, without going into any detail. I just wondered what they are alluding to, because alternatives are not likely to cater for a 20% reduction in car journeys, plus a 20% increase in development at the same time. I'm just wondering quite how they reconcile the two.
Can I bring in Natalie on that one? Is that right, Jill? Is that what?
Yep, no, that's fine. Thank you, Chair. There are two policies within the plan that talk about the sustainable and active travel agenda, which is something that we were asked by the new coalition to really push in this local plan. So there is the strategic policy, which is ST9, promoting sustainable transport and active travel. And then there is the development management policy, which is DM, sorry, my eyesight is bad, actually, DM10, Managing Transport Demand and Impact. And both of those policies give the detail about alternatives to the car, which would be walking, cycling, car clubs, those sort of things. It's getting people out of their cars, which are obviously not good in terms of air pollution, which, as you all know, is a issue in the borough with the AQMAs that we have, and also with congestion And also with trying to promote healthy communities, getting people out and about is much better. So there are those two policies which explain it in much more detail, and also the allocation policies further down in the plan for the specific areas also detail in their policies how those specific developments will provide car-based alternatives, and also the accompanying swale transport strategy, which is still a draft at this stage, looks at it in much more detail. But it's something that, you know, as a council, we have signed the climate and ecological emergency. And there were lots of actions in that for the local plan to deliver. And one of those is the alternatives to the car and the sustainable and active travel agenda. So we've really been asked to push that in the local plan. So there are lots of alternatives. And I know it's a very hard thing for people to change their mindset. I think, as I said before, at one of the workshops we had, it's something that, you know, luckily a lot of the young people coming through, you know, people taking up their driving license, you know, is really reducing when they can do it at 17, partly cost of insurance, but also because people are much more environmentally minded. But there are the options really are walking, cycling, car sharing, using public transport, buses, trains. So there's those two main policies really set it out. But then there are lots of bits scattered through the plan in the vision and some of the other strategic policies, such as the climate change ones, and then in the allocation policies. But also the accompanying transport strategy really gives it a bit more beef and sort of, you know, adds meat to the bones to help explain that in a bit more detail. Oh, sorry. Is that the end of me when the bell goes? Sorry.
Is that okay, Glyn?
Well, all very laudable and applaud it all. But we know nobody's got the money, and nor likely to have the money, to invest in alternatives. You know, buses are an obvious one. They've come and gone in the last couple of years because they're not used enough. And to reduce car trips by 20% at the same time as increasing development by 20%, the investment isn't there and isn't going to be there in the next 10 years.
But sorry, Chair.
I was just going to say, have you read the active travel documents and the other work that officers have done on alternative travel, Glyn?
Yeah, I've got about 1,000 pages in front of me. I didn't manage to find those.
Okay, Natalie, did you want to add anything?
Well, I was just going to say, Chair, thank you, that it, as I said, it is a tough ask. You know, we've really got to change. We've got to lead from the front. You know, air quality and improving air quality is, you know, a key challenge that the council have said that they want to deal with. We've got the climate change emergency that we've signed. You know, they will be these awkward, you know, hard decisions we've got to make. Within the allocation policies, we've asked for them to be providing the cycling and walking infrastructure and the bus infrastructure and train infrastructure to make that easier. And we've just got to do it. You know, if we don't put it in now in the plan, we wait another 5 years till the next plan and we've lost the opportunity. Yes, it will be tricky. We accept that. But we've got to try it now. Otherwise, I think we would be failing our residents personally.
On air quality, the recommendations for electric cars should cover that.
Yep, and those are included as well. We've got, you know, within the new parking strategy that the council adopted last summer now, there's things about electric cars, you know, car clubs for electric cars. So there's a whole suite of options. And actually, just today in The Guardian, there's a new company that's now you can charge your car in 5 minutes, which will really help, especially, you know, in the terrace streets, in especially Faversham, Sittingbourne and Sheerness. You know, I couldn't have a electric car at the minute because we have on-street parking. But, you know, with developments like that, things are really moving forward because car companies can see that's where, you know, the money is and that's where they're now investing. So I think, you know, this is an opportunity that we've really got to grasp if we are going to deal with climate change and get people out of their cars, you know, and using active travel. There's so many benefits in terms of health, you know, in both mental and physical, air quality, you know, bringing communities together. If you think how many people you chat to on the walk down into town, I think I agree it will be hard, but I think we've got to try it.
Can I ask Deputy Cabinet Member Alastair Gould to come in on this, because I know he's been working on the active travel.
Thank you. So I put into an item on the comment, but I think I'm not sure where it transmitted. I think the main thrust of the policy is about giving people the opportunity and having that idea of active travel almost as a golden thread, so that if you do put, in making sure that when it comes to the allocations and to the strategies, that we're not removing the options of people to actually make these choices, because it's very easy to do that if the policies aren't geared round giving people the chance to travel actively by the remoteness of the allocations or even the structure within them. And so if you don't put these policies through the whole plan, then actually people won't do it because they can't. This at least gives them the opportunity to provide that to give that choice, give them the choice.
Okay, is that okay, Glenn?
Yeah, there's only one last query. I couldn't find in all those pages, because obviously I haven't read every page, but I did look through. I tried to find out where it says about parking arrangements in town centres, where there used to be a maximum of one, so you could have none. Or as it is now, as I thought it had been proposed and recommended and approved, a minimum of one per unit in the system. I couldn't find it.
It's because it's in another document. It refers to our parking standards document, but our parking standards document is a separate document.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Yep. Councillor Whiting.
Thank you, Chairman. Much obliged. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. Just picking up, if I may, quickly on Councillor Hunt's original point about the transport strategy. You said it's not unusual to go to Reg 19 without an agreed transport strategy, and I wonder whether there are any examples you or the officers could give us of where councils have done that. My concern really is that an agreed model may not be available until we get to the public inquiry stage, and I wonder whether officers have considered the risk of getting that far down the process without a strategy being agreed. As you can imagine, my specific concerns around all this is a lack of clarity, and picking up on Councillor Whelan's point, which touched on viability, how the traffic generated by the area of opportunity in Tenham will be handled, particularly with regard to air quality over the wider A2 corridor between Brenly and Key Spring. And I note also in the report that it says that many of the many harmful particulates from electric cars are no less damaging than those from diesel cars, and the levels are no less in themselves. So I just wondered whether we could just have a comment on the last point and answers to the first two. Many thanks.
I don't think I said unusual. I think I said it's not unreasonable. But certainly, Natalie, can you answer the question regarding the particulates? Is that your field?
Oh, no, that's not actually. Sorry, Chair. I think that's probably more Anna's cup of tea, if Anna is on the call.
Sorry, Anna.
If not, I could give it a go.
She is here. Anna, are you able to take that one? Okay, cheers. Looks like you may be taking it yourself.
I'm happy to have an answer in writing afterwards, Chairman, if it helps.
Yep, that would be perfect, actually. Thank you, Councillor Whiting. If you could email it to myself, and then I can discuss it with Anna tomorrow, because I think it does cross both of our topic areas, actually. And then we could give you a more comprehensive answer. So if you could email it to myself, thank you very much.
You had a third part of your question, Councillor Whiting. I don't know if we've answered that bit. Okay, Councillor Bowen has put his printed his question now. Jill, are you able to look at that now?
Yes, Chair, thanks for that. That's certainly made my life easier. Okay, so at what time has pollution costs, health and wellbeing been included in preparing members? Planning is linked to pollution through the concept of cumulative impact mandated in the NPPF guidelines and government policy definitions of harm from particulate matters. Right, so the whole plan has been informed by air quality evidence, including cumulative impacts, which is also addressed through the work of the sustainability appraisal. And in fact, air quality is a priority of the Council across all policy platforms. So that has been considered, and it's an integrative part of the process. It's not a matter for viability, it's a matter for what the air quality evidence concludes. And that was reported to panel back in, October or November, I think. Thank you.
Okay, I'll go back to the order. So it'll be Councillor Hunt, then Councillor Saunders, and then back to Councillor Bowen. So Councillor Hunt.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I've just got a couple of things. First one is on windfall sites, and I am pleased to see that the number has been reduced down on windfall. So I had a concern when we were looking at figures of 2,000 up to 3,000. But I'm still a little bit confused of how we're going to be dealing with windfall. And on page 31 of the document, that's policy ST5, we're saying that windfall sites where the small scale of development is designed, layout and landscaping would support and enhance the character of the area. And we're only talking about small scale development. And I know that it's being looked at with the idea that these windfall sites will be for SME builders to come forward and create opportunities. And I'm just wondering how we're going to be able to limit the size of the windfall sites, because I know that obviously in DM14 on page 157, it goes into that detail a bit more. But we're still seeing there that large-scale sites could come forward as windfall, and as long as SME builders were building out on those sites. But it just seems to me that you can have a big site still coming forward, which may not help if you've got an SME builder that owns a small site that they want to build out. And also, if we're looking at, I think there was a comment in there somewhere that the windfall sites will be looking at the later part of the plan, and how is that going to be helping SME builders if we're keeping up a 5-year supply, and SME builders want to be coming in an earlier stage but don't get any opportunities until later in the plan.
So can you show us give us a reference to where it says the SMEs will only be able to come in later in the plan? Can't find it.
I haven't got that bit. That's just what I've got in my head that I've read in there somewhere, so I've not highlighted that point. But I've picked it up as, if we're talking about that we've got policies coming forward enough to be able to deliver for the 5-year in the allocated sites, then those windfall sites obviously are not going to be coming forward, because unless...
We're carrying forward the windfall sites that are in the existing local plan. So there's a number that are already in the local plan. I can't remember the numbers. I think it's about 126 a year. And then the higher numbers will kick in after 5 years when that period of windfall has expired. So for the first 5 years, we're carrying forward the windfall allocations that were already in the local plan.
Right, okay, that's, so you're still including some windfall within that 5 years.
Yes.
And newer allocated sites that may come forward before that could still be looked at.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And on windfall...
Chair, sorry, it's James here, Head of Planning. Can I just explain just something very quickly? From a local planning inspector's point of view, we can't take into account windfall for the first 3 years of a five-year supply. It's just the way they calculate it. So it's only from year four or five onwards that you can take into account windfalls.
But they will still be able to come forward if they fit in.
They can come forward at any time, yeah. And that's taken into account in your delivery once they're delivered. But you can't take them into account in your five-year supply.
But we can take them forward into counting in the first 5 years because they're already in the local plan.
If they've already got planning permission and they're due to be built out, then they're taken into account, yes.
Right.
Can I... Chair, would you mind if I... Thank you. I think it's really easy to get confused about what a windfall is. Ultimately, it's a site that's not allocated. And with regards to sites that might be suitable for SMEs, if we knew where we were, we would be looking to allocate them. That is the absolute ideal scenario in the planning world, is to allocate sites. But we have a very strong track record of windfall sites. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that when proposals come forward for windfall sites, not sites that aren't allocated, we want to be in a position where we can control and manage their development and get the best outcome in terms of design and all of our other policies. And it's really important, in addition to that, to have a supply of smaller sites. That's a requirement in the NPPF. Thanks.
Okay. Councillor Saunders.
Oh, sorry, can I come back? So I just had a couple more. Yep. Thanks for that. Still on windfall, and thanks for that answer. It just does concern me that we have these sites come forward, especially when we look at planning committee. We get small sites coming forward that aren't in the local plan. Would be ideal for SME builders, but then we're looking at refusing it because we've got a five-year supply. But that's something that we'll have to deal with as it comes up. But just again on the windfall still, this is on the park homes that we're looking at in policy DM18, and would park homes fall under that classification of windfall site because there's no allocated sites for those?
So I lost you a bit in the middle of that, Councillor Hunt.
Sorry, it's just that windfall sites, this is on the park homes policy, on policy DM18.
Right.
And would park homes fall under windfall sites because we haven't got any allocated sites for them?
Yes, if somebody comes forward with a proposal for a park home site, it would be like any other application. It would depend on how it fitted in with the overall strategy of the local plan, so yes.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for that clarification. And finally, this is on affordable housing. And this is on page 159. It may be page 181 of the whole document. Policy DM15, affordable housing. And this is something maybe we've got a chance to do something about that we've had issues in the past. And it is... DM15 3, in exceptional circumstances in accordance with the housing supplementary planning document, and it goes on, if on-site affordable housing provision cannot be delivered, affordable housing provision may be commuted to a financial contribution to be used off-site, singly or in combination with other contributions. Now, I understand why there's reasons at some points that we can't deliver affordable housing on the site, but a concern that I have got is that if we're looking at affordable housing in one part of the borough, for instance, in Faversham, I think if it can't be delivered on site and we take a commuted sum, we should still be looking at delivering affordable housing in that part of the borough. Because at times we it's looked at as it could be delivered elsewhere. I think if there's a need for affordable housing somewhere and we're trying to deliver that, we should be making sure that we can deliver it in that same area. So I don't know if it's something that could be looked at, and even if it's possible to do, but maybe add some wording into that to make sure that those are delivered in the area where the original application was for. And similarly...
Can we stop there? Because I have some sympathy with that. Would that be a minor amendment we could make, James?
Yes, Chair. The only comment I would make is, obviously, there is this, if you look at the wording, we are looking to bring forward an SPD document, which could that would be able to provide you with that policy guidance that you're suggesting there. So it form part of that basis. And that SPD will be produced in tandem with the local plan moving through to examination.
Okay, lovely. I'm on calling Councillor Martin.
I'm still going on that one, if that's all right.
It was in answer to you, Councillor Hunt.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's all right. My only concern with putting that in, and I understand why it would be nice to have it in, I think sometimes we can get a lot more for our money by having the flexibility there and balancing up the ability and flexibility to be able to spend commuted sums where we can get the most bang for our buck and serve the need. Because sometimes actually the developments that come forward where you, for whatever reason, a developer can't provide on site, it isn't necessarily in an area where we might need the affordable housing. So over the previous 5 years, a prime example is we've not been able to get much, if anything at all, on the Isle of Sheppey, where actually we have the highest need for affordable housing. So sometimes having that flexibility in the policy as it currently is would enable us to take funds and divert them to where they're needed.
Okay, the housing supplementary planning document will be coming before the panel, won't it, James?
Absolutely, Chair. So we'll run through the local plan panel. We'll go out to consultation and come back to the local plan panel and through to Cabinet for adoption in parallel with the local plan.
Okay, lovely. Other James, you are continuing.
Yeah, thanks for that. If it's coming through as a supplementary, I think there's been probably a lot of discussion to be had then and we can look at it. It would have been nice to have something actually in the main policy. And what Councillor Martin said there, again, there's sort of different sides of it because we could be looking at, will developers get then to build in an area that's more profitable for them and not deliver the affordable housing there? So there's lots of ways of looking at it that we can discuss. But in a similar vein to that one with the affordable housing, it's the open space sports and recreation provision policy DM17. And that's the same, that if we can't deliver it on the site, we'll be looking at putting it elsewhere. But I think it's important in communities that we do get open space sports provision for those developments. And I think that also needs to be made sure that anything off-site is delivered at a reasonable proximity to the development site and not elsewhere.
Yeah, I can just say that from my own experience, when that used to be the case, there was a little estate built in Dunaway, and they had to provide the green on the estate, something the size of a carpet chucked next to somebody's house, and nobody ever looked after it and realised it was a green space. So a little bit of flexibility there mightn't be a bad thing. Councillor Saunders.
Thank you for allowing me to speak, Chair. I've got a fairly specific question about health provision in Faversham, but I also wanted to make a general comment about transport. In relation to health, in the main plan, on page 71, previously in Bearing Fruits, there was a reference to there being a doctor's surgery built in the Love Lane area. That doesn't seem to now be referenced in the plan. And when you go to the infrastructure delivery plan, in terms of medical facilities in Faversham, it just refers to extending the existing two surgeries. So I'm wondering, is it possible to give us any more information about whether it's still planned to have a doctor's surgery over towards Love Lane? My second comment really is about the transport element. I think I'm probably towards the other end of the spectrum to Councillor Whelan. I feel very positive about the encouragement of active travel in the travel document. But there does seem to be a slight kind of schizophrenic element to it, because I've only looked at the stuff in Faversham, but the solution to some of the other problems seems to be to look towards opening up residential areas for more cars to drive through, or in one case to build a fresh road. You, at the beginning in the introduction, it was mentioned that the development of this is involves both KCC and Swale. I'd be quite interested to know a bit more about how that works, and whether some of the differences here do reflect different emphases that perhaps Swale and KCC have got. Thank you.
Okay, if we take the first one, I think a lot of that is we're beholden to the clinical commissioning group and what they deem appropriate. So Jill, I don't know who would deal with that.
Karen?
Is Karen here?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I can comment on that.
Lovely, thank you.
Okay, you're right. As part of preparing the infrastructure delivery plan, we've consulted with the Kent and Medway CCG, who are our statutory consultee on health matters. They've confirmed that there is no requirement for any on-site health provision as part of the local plan review. They have published estate strategies on which they've based their response, which indicates that the sort of priorities for general practice is extensions or reconfiguration of the existing practices in Faversham. They have been asked on several occasions just to confirm that there is no requirement for on-site provision, and they have done so. So at the moment, we're just looking for developer contributions towards extensions to those two existing practices in Faversham. Thank you.
I think this is something we've experienced in Sittingbourne as well. I personally don't think it's a particularly satisfactory way forward, but that's within the remit of the clinical commissioning groups and how they prefer to operate. We seem to have very little influence on that. Jill, can you deal with Council Saunders' second part, or is that Natalie?
Oh, yes, I can deal with that part in terms of the transport strategy. In terms of where it suggests opening up residential roads to through traffic, they are actually proposed where it would take traffic away from known AQMA or air quality areas with issues with air quality, because I have to admit, when it was first suggested, I thought the same as you. But it's so that it takes traffic away from known congestion hotspots, or as I said, air quality areas. So you're sort of dispersing the traffic away. So I think one of them, say, is Ospringe, where there's suggestions for the lower road bit around Bisingwood at Faversham, if I remember rightly. So it's dispersing that traffic. So rather than a bit like a honeypot site in tourism terms, so it's not pushing everyone into the one area. So it's just slowly dispersing traffic to move it around. So you haven't got one impact where we've already got exceedances in poor air quality. And then in terms of the relationship between KCC and Swale, obviously I can't comment from a political point of view. You'll be well aware of the relationship between yourselves. At the minute, we have written it together. My colleague at KCC Highways has assisted with it, because obviously they are the Strategic Highways Authority. In an ideal world, once we've got the transport modelling run done of the preferred sites, we will look at the transport strategy again and see if any other mitigations need to be fed into it as a result of that transport run. And then we would have it as a joint document, because, as I said, they are the Strategic Highways Authority, but it will be for them to then take it to their members and to go through their system. But they have been heavily involved because obviously they have the expertise. But as I said, I think, you know, it's probably more a political issue than an officer level. So I can't really comment any further. Thank you.
Okay. Jill, you'll note Councillor Whiting's questions he's printed out on the IMs. If I think Natalie said she would reply to one of them tomorrow, if we can just note them.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, they've been noted.
Lovely. Julian, have you finished?
Sorry, thank you, Chair.
Right. Councillor Martin, I think that was about an earlier point.
Yeah. Yeah, it was indeed. But while I'm on, thanks for letting me speak. And just to confirm, I did raise an email with yourself and Jill earlier in the week regarding the wording on the affordable homes policy, DM15, from what I can recall. And just for the benefit of other members, I believe we agreed on a minor change to the wording, just to make it very clear that the cascade would be, if another RP couldn't be found, that the cascade was to other potential providers, for example, your community land trusts, your almshouses, and perhaps even other companies that offer affordable housing prior to going to the commuted sum route.
Including the council's company.
Yeah. Along that line.
Councillor Bowen. You were coming back.
Thank you, Chairman. It's a few points, and I'm focusing on my particular ward of the Tenham West site, which has crept into the local plan quite discreetly and is now being called an area of opportunity. Frankly, it's an opportunity. It's an area that will be devastated if this goes ahead. But I thank the officer for the answer to the question earlier. But on this particular site of my ward, what we're, in essence, we're looking to do is perhaps increase the number of houses by over 40% and offset that against a new couple of roads within the ward. I'm not sure how that compares to the council's policy of no roads for the expense of houses, which is taken. But the question I would like to ask you is this idea of a bypass through Tenham. It seems that the idea for the Tenham West rests on the idea of the bypass. But we've just been talking about active travel and air quality. And that may take it away from the A2 if it's agreed. But where is it going to start and stop? It's going to then lead into other areas where you have air quality issues. We can't have a bypass around the whole of North Swale or that part of Swale between the M2 and Sittingbourne. Wouldn't it be easy just to have a new junction further up on the M2? That's a different mute point. But it's just going to move things around and open even more area up for future housing. And quite frankly, my residents are absolutely appalled from this being included in this document. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowen. The proposals for the site allocations were discussed at length in October or November's local plan panel when this was on the table, the Tenham area search. So that was when we could have gone into detail about it. But the proposal is, and I think one of the officers mentioned it earlier, this is the last opportunity to take traffic away from the A2 through Tenham. There's been a lot of housing north of the A2, but no bypass. So this is the last opportunity we really have of taking traffic, especially HGV traffic, away from the A2 through the centre of Tenham Village. The other plans that had come forward, which was to fill up the gap between Tenham, Bapchild and Stones Farm with 2,000 houses as part of the Quinn's proposal, was obviously something else that was being looked at previous to this administration and has now been ruled out. And I'm sure you'd welcome the fact that the 2,000 houses on the north side of the A2 is not going into the local plan, but we have taken the opportunity to finally provide a bypass that will take HGV traffic away from the centre of Tenham Village.
Can I come back on you with that, Mr. Chairman? Yes. I'll take your point about the 2,000 houses, but the Tenham West site wasn't in that plan to begin with, so we've still got 1,000 houses coming in there. And to say it's going to take... Yes, it will reduce traffic through the village, no doubt about that, if the bypass is built, but it's at the expense of building another 1,000 houses, which is going to put even more traffic onto the local road. So whether you've got a bypass, whether it goes down the A2, unless you're going to dual carriageway that entire area, where we've got one just up the road, it's called the M2, it's ridiculous. It will be a devastating, destructive impact on this area of Swale, which this council and the members who agree this will need to hold their heads up and actually account for it. Thank you.
OK, as I say, we discussed this at length in October, November. That would have been the time to bring these points up. Councillor Fole.
Thank you, Chairman, for letting me speak, as I don't often contribute to these meetings, unfortunately. Can I just clarify Councillor Martin's earlier comment? Did he just suggest that private housing is more appropriate for Faversham and that Sheppey is more suitable for social housing? So is there no need for social housing in Faversham?
Well, I don't recall that being said at all. Councillor Martin, would you like to correct Councillor Fole's misinterpretation of your words?
I will make it very, very clear. There is a high need for affordable housing on the Isle of Sheppey that has not been met. There is a need for affordable housing in Sittingbourne, in Faversham and in the rural areas. What I was saying was, on occasions for commuted sums, it may be more appropriate to utilise those sums in areas where there is a higher need.
Not these days.
That doesn't mean that there's not a need anywhere else. It just means that, you know, the flexibility to be able to use it where there is the highest need makes sense.
Thank you, Councillor Martin. Any further comment, Councillor Fole?
No, I'll reserve. No, there's no need. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Valentine.
Yeah, thank you for letting me speak, Chair. Perhaps if I could start by commenting on some of the issues about air quality that have been raised. So one question that Councillor Bowen asked with a question from the resident was, why are we not taking sufficient account of particulate matters as a pollutant? I wouldn't want to comment on that directly, but I would point out that all the air quality management areas in Swale, with the exception of one, have been declared for nitrogen dioxide, not for particulate matter. The exception being St Paul's, where we've only declared it for particulate matter last year. And in fact, we suspect much of the source of that particulate matter is not coming from traffic. So nitrogen dioxide, not particulate matter, is the major problem. Now, I'm fully aware that when I say that, I'm referring to UK legislation. There is a view with which I'm very sympathetic that the legislation that we adopt should adopt World Health Organization levels, which are about half the UK legislation. But even then, yes, we exceed it. The data is very coarse, and I think there's more or less one figure for all of Swale. We do exceed it, but we only exceed it by a very tiny amount. And so whether the government chooses to adopt that or not is a moot point. And I think if they do, the problem will be how we meet it. So nitrogen dioxide is the major problem we have in Swale. I should point out Tenham, I think I'm correct in saying, has not exceeded the standards, the legal standards for nitrogen dioxide for the last 2 years. While I'm still on particulate matters, points Councillor Whiting raised about particulate matters from electric vehicles, There's very poor real or very dearth of real world data on this at the moment, so there is some debate about it. Obviously, I would point out also with the issue about the bypass in Tenham, which I'll come back to, we're talking about diverting HGVs away from the air quality management area. There is data, I've seen it in the paper we have before us in one of the appendix, is that HGVs are not the problem in air quality management areas. It is diesel cars. So whereas HGVs typically contribute less than 10% of the nitrogen dioxide, diesel cars contribute more than 50%. So it's diesel cars that are the problem. So obviously, if we move to EVs, we take those diesel cars off the road and we do a lot about reducing the NOx, nitrogen dioxide, for which the AQMAs are declared. But on particulate matter from EVs, so the source of particulate matter, it is argued, comes from brake dust, from braking, from wear on the tyres and wear on the road surface itself. Of course, there's also particulate matter that comes out of the exhaust pipe of diesels in particular. So EVs eliminate the tailpipe emissions entirely. Now, there is an argument EVs tend to be heavier than traditional cars because of the batteries. So there's an argument that the tyre and road wear will be greater. And indeed, the brake wear would be greater. However, EVs have regenerative braking, so you can brake using the electronic circuitry rather than a physical pad on a disc. And having owned an EV for 2 years, I can tell you that with my last car, when I used to clean it, the wheels would be caked with brake dust that's sort of baked on and difficult to get off. Cleaning my EV, I didn't notice no brake dust whatsoever. So the regenerative braking, I think, probably does make a substantial difference. EVs tend to have energy efficient tyres. They're energy efficient. They're not necessarily as grippy as the tyres on ordinary cars. And so I suspect the tyre wear may well be, or that would be a factor that would make the tyre wear and therefore the road wear lower for EVs. Though I agree they do tend to be heavier and that might increase it. So we need to see some data on that. But it's undoubtedly the case that EVs will almost certainly reduce particulate matter as well as eliminating NOx in the air quality management areas. If I can talk, I would use your reply to the questions that Councillor Bowen asked. I have considerable sympathy with the issue he raises about the bypass in Tenham. You said October and November was the time to raise these issues. I would point out I did raise them at that time. I raised the issues about the bypass at Tenham. I raised the issues about the extensive development of the east of Faversham. And I raised the issue about the development in Neame's Forestall, where we will not only be developing in the area of outstanding natural beauty, but that particular village will be more than doubled in size by that development. So I raised all those issues, and I have to say my points were just entirely ignored. So I don't think that's been a very adequate answer to Lord Byam's comments. And I'm very sympathetic to the issue that while you might bypass some of the air quality management area in Tenham, you're just going to build that up in Ospringe and in East Street, in particular, the two air quality management areas at the opposite ends where those traffic is originating from or going to. So I don't see it as any solution at all. And I agree with the comment, I think it was Councillor Saunders said that the commitment to the walking and cycling strategy is a bit schizophrenic because we're talking about building new roads. I would point out that one thing we have learned from planning over decades is that if you build a road, you will increase the traffic. So you might improve the problem in Tenham for a bit, but in 20 years' time, we'll have 50% more traffic just that grows organically out of that because we make it easier for people to drive their cars by building extra roads. I think it's a really stupid idea, and I'm against the principle of building extra roads to try and build our way out by encouraging people to drive more in principle. So sorry, that was my comment. There were a lot of long comments. I apologise. My question is, I want to ask about the consultation process that we go into. I understand not just this, but the whole process is what I'm interested in. And in particular, I want to know, at what stage do residents have the opportunity to comment on the specific sites and raise objections or indeed support for these sites? And is there at that stage a realistic opportunity that sites may be taken out or added into the local plan?
James, can you give us a reminder of the process in answer to Councillor Valentine's query? Is Jill able to do that? James?
I'm happy to give it a start. Jill can come in as she wishes.
Okay.
We've gone through Regulation 18. That's what we did with looking back. We're now at Regulation 19, and that's where people make formal representations about the soundness of the plan. So they can support the plan by saying it's sound, or they can argue against the soundness of the plan. Now, those representations are collated by us as the local planning authority, and they're passed on to the planning inspectorate. And that will eventually go to an examination where a planning inspector will look at those representations, and then we'll take those into account at that stage. So at this stage, it is formal consultation. It's giving people an opportunity to say why they believe our plan is either sound or unsound. That's what the key question is.
Thank you. Councillor Hunt.
Sorry, Chair, can I come back in on that question? So what happens after the Regulation 19 consultation? Specifically, when do residents be able to comment on specific sites rather than the soundness of the plan as a whole?
They can comment on any aspect of the plan now. Once it goes out to consultation, which should be February, March, you can comment on any part of the local plan. Those comments go to the inspector for his or her consideration when they hold the examination in public. They will also be able to raise questions at the examination in public on those issues that the inspector feels there are a need for questions. It depends on the public response.
Chair, would you mind if I just added to that? Thank you. The council's starting point is that the plan is sound. So if anybody wants to make representations about the plan, the most effective way they can do that is to say, I don't like this site, these are the reasons why, and to suggest where would be a better site and why it would be a better site. Because at the end of the day, it has to go somewhere. We will not be able to go into the examination without meeting our local housing need figure. The inspector will just kick it out on the first day.
Yeah, and we have met our housing need figure. Okay, Councillor Hunt.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It was just as Councillor Valentine was talking, and I mean, I hadn't commented. I knew ward members were here, and they would comment. I mean, it is a major concern, the traffic with Tenement, putting a road around, and I've said this before in previous meetings, I don't think it's going to be helping. And if you're looking at, as I've said before, 850 houses in City Hall Town Centre, it's not doing anything for the roads when you put that amount of housing in Tenham and expect everyone to come through Sittingbourne to get to it, because that's where the majority will be coming from, and obviously we'll be seeing that when the traffic modelling comes through. But from what Councillor Valentine said there is that Tenham is not
You repeat this, Councillor Hunt? Your last 10 seconds vanished.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Go again.
Sorry, you kept breaking up then as well. Okay. It's just Councillor Valentine mentioned about Tenham had not exceeded the particulate matter for some time, and that lorries aren't a problem, and it's cars that are. But in this, we're looking at the reason for the road being needed is to take cars away and lorries away from the A2. I just think that maybe when it actually comes up to it, developers may be trying to get a bit of wriggle room there and get out of it to say that it's not actually needed for air quality, etc. And just on again, what Councillor Valentine said, I completely agree with, and it's a concern that I raised at the beginning. And it is the way that we are dealing with this, of going out to consultation with residents, asking them what they think, but not having an opportunity for it to come back to us to make any major changes. And I think you do need to be clear that this is a case of asking what people want and then giving it all to the inspector to deal with it. This is the last opportunity that we are going to have to make any changes. And while we've got a local plan that it may be looking to be what is seen to be sound, and I think there will be a lot of arguments in the consultation process against that, whether it is for the traffic modelling reasons or other reasons. I think it's going to be a tough time when those responses come in. But if you, the way we're looking at it is it could be a sound plan and you're going out, but I don't think everyone's had the opportunity to really and get into the each specific sites and have an opportunity to discuss it all. When we come to voting on it, I'm going to be voting against, but just for the fact that I don't think we should be sending it to the planning inspector in the evidence and everything that we've got at the moment. We need to look at more detail and wait a little bit longer.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Hunt. Councillor Whiting.
Yeah, so thank you. It's very much building on what Councillor Hunt just said. I mean, from a point of view of Tenham, I think Tenham is frankly being shafted here, and it's being sent no lifelines at all about how it's going to cope with the additional development that the council would suggest it has. I don't think it's a sound plan at all. A sound plan would have those details in it. It would show where that bypass was going. It would show how that bypass was going to be paid for. It would show how the traffic either end of that bypass has been talked about in Ospringe and going through East Street into Sittingbourne, how that traffic would be managed. And it shows none of those things. And I think it's wrong to suggest. I have every respect for the officers, and we do need to go in with a sound plan. But I do not believe this is a sound plan. And I think for that reason, it will be very difficult for people to come up with alternatives other than to simply say, as I think you've heard tonight from the two ward members in Tenham, that this is not a good idea and we shouldn't be putting it in Tenham. Go find somewhere else. And I don't think it's the responsibility of the general members of the public on the limited information they will have given the four elements of information still to come in. We're going to go out to consultation at Reg 19 without much of that information. And I think it's unfair on the public to ask them to comment reasonably and suggest that their comments would only be valid in a way if they come back with solutions to fix a problem that clearly up until now the administration has failed to solve. So I don't get a vote in the meeting tonight, Chairman, but if I had, I'd be joining Councillor Hunt in the nay lobby.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I see nobody else in the IM, so I go back to the recommendations on page 5, I think, which were moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Bonney. I suggest that we take them en bloc, all four. So I'm going to now, Councillor Balder, I'm in favour. Councillor Bonney?
Four.
Councillor Gould?
Four.
Councillor Hunt?
Against.
Councillor Jackson?
Four.
Councillor Jays?
Four.
Councillor Marchington?
Abstain.
Councillor Martin?
Against.
Is that the other Councillor Martin? I didn't realise that. Right. Councillor Palmer?
Four.
Councillor Thomas?
Four.
Councillor Whelan? Councillor Whelan.
He's trying to. Ah, got it. So I was up to that room. I couldn't unmute it for.
Okay, I made that 7-4, 2 against and 1 abstention.
I made that 8-4, 2 against and 1 abstention.
Oh, I didn't count myself. Okay, thank you, Kelly. Right, well, thank you everybody for that meeting. It was a good meeting. Yeah, thank you, and thank you to all the officers for all the work they've put forward. I hope you all have a good rest of the evening. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Chairman. Good night.
Bye all. Good night, Chair. Good night, all.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, good night, Chair.
Cheers,
good
Peter.
Night, all.
Good night, Chair.
Cheers.